Thank you very much indeed, Nick. Now, if this year's London Book Fair is anything to go by, organising a literary fair with China as the guest of honour is a tricky business. Well, the event kicked off today amid heavy criticism that the Chinese government has been given carte blanche to decide who's included and, more importantly, who's not.
We're joined on the line now by Robert Sharp, the head of campaigns and communications of English Pen, which campaigns for freedom of expression in the literary world. Good evening to you, Robert.
Good evening, and thanks for having me on the show.
Pleasure. Now, firstly, what is this issue with the London Book Fair and how has Beijing exerted undue influence on the invitation list?
OK, well, London Book Fair is a trade fair. It's a place where publishers buy rights, they sign authors, and they make deals. And to help this, every year they designate a country or region as a market focus. So last year it was China, next year it's Turkey. China is the largest country in the world. It's the largest largest publisher by volume. And so it's understandable that the London Book Fair is going to look east at some point with China as the market focus. Now, the British Council are involved in this. Every year they arrange a cultural program for the market focus, and they invite authors from that focus country to the book fair to talk about their work and hopefully to make some of those deals and engage in cultural exchange. But this year, the British Council have done this by working with something called the General Administration of Press and Publication, or GAP, which is a government body. And the problem, and the reason we're talking today, is that GAP is also the censorship body. And that's really what's worried a lot of people who are visiting the book fair.
Is this the only country where there is a close link, or it's the same thing? In fact, the outward face of literature from a country is the same as the censorship body. Is there no other country that does it like that?
I think because China is so powerful, or just so big, and actually has this grip on the travel of its citizens, that's what's sort of presenting the particular problem. Last year, I mean, there are certainly free expression issues in Russia, last year's market focus. But the country simply can't exert that kind of pressure over and freedom of movement over its own citizens that China can. So this year, the British Council say that they really have no choice but to work with this GAP organisation.
Robert, there's been lots of talk about how there are some startling omissions in the world of Chinese literature there. Who would be some examples of people you would really expect to be there that aren't?
Absolutely. Well, Ma Zhan, for example, is a writer of a book called Beijing Coma. He's an emigre. He's an exile. He lives in London, but hugely influential around the world. It's just very, very odd to be having this big discussion of Chinese literature and to not have him included. Someone who is part of the program is another dissident writer called Jung Chang, but she's not part of the official British Council program. She's part of my own organization's Literary Cafe. We have a spot at the London Book Fair, and because she wasn't invited to be part of the official delegation from China, we invited her anyway. So she spoke at our event today.
So, I mean, their loss, your gain in some ways.
Absolutely. I mean, it was great to have her in our space. She's a very eloquent, elegant woman, and a very eloquent woman as well on the issues of Chinese literature, the history of Chairman Mao, and going back into the longer history of China. It's really very odd that that the Chinese government don't endorse her. She's a great advocate for what China as a civilization has to offer. But unfortunately, because there's this narrow and very monolithic view of what constitutes Chinese culture, someone like Jung Chang wasn't invited to take part in the British Council's official program. And that's what we've been sort of raising as an issue and saying is very odd.
But Robert, perhaps your organisation and the British Council should have been expecting such a reaction from China. And because, I mean, in the past with exhibitions and events that have been done in tandem with the Chinese authorities' exhibitions at museums across the world, there's always been quite a lot of back and forth and give and take and walking the diplomatic tightrope.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's clearly happened this year. I mean, it's not for us as an NGO, as a human rights charity, to really comment on the discussions that the British Council and the London Book Fair have had with the Chinese government. Yeah, absolutely. It's sort of part and parcel. And as I say, because China is such a big country, it's clearly going to be very influential in the next century. What we're not saying is that these kind of events should be boycotted, that we should stop engaging with China. We need to hear what they have to say and hear what they have to think. And hopefully we can talk about our literature and what we think and our politics as well. And our values of free expression, which is something that English Pen have been doing today, and we'll do it tomorrow and Wednesday at the book fair as well, is talk about free expression, talk about the value of free expression to a country's cultural development, but also, frankly, to its economy and its growth as well.
I'm interested in looking at China's role moving forward now in the literary world. On the global market, as with many parts of the economy in China, the domestic consumption is now outweighing the export potential. And so, you know, foreign interest is increasingly irrelevant other than cultural influence. Economically, they don't need people outside of their own country to be interested in their literature. What, you know, moving forward, what's the relationship? Is it about us gleaning stuff from their culture, or is it about us exporting our literature products to China?
Well, I think if you look at any sort of civilization, any sort of great power, any influential country throughout the history of the world, they've always engaged with other countries and co-opted and engaged in cultural exchange with the world around them. Name a great civilization in history. You know, the Egyptians or the Romans or the British Empire or the American sort of pseudo empire we have now. They are built and they succeed when they are open. And that's not a sort of, you know, not a sort of casual thing where they sort of suck, suck ideas or suck money from the people around them. It's when they really succeed and they really build and they really win friends when there is a genuine cultural engagement, when there's a genuine exchange of ideas. And I think, you know, if China is very welcome, I suppose, the Chinese government are very welcome to try and pursue a kind of an attitude of, we don't really need you, we're just going to use you to consume our products. But they're going to hit a ceiling. There's a ceiling to how much they can glean from that. They're not going to achieve a real benefit and a real growth and a real improvement in living standards for their citizens, if indeed that's something that they want to do, without actually opening up and having a proper, genuine cultural exchange, which is inevitably going to involve an exchange of ideas and around democracy, around freedom, allowing these dissident views, allowing these alternative accounts of how one should live our lives to be discussed in China. Ai Weiwei wrote a very interesting piece in The Guardian today where he essentially saying that he wasn't too worried about China because the dam of the internet, I'm mixing the metaphors, but the Chinese can't dam the internet, that free expression and ideas and culture will eventually break that dam that the Chinese government are sort of erecting around its citizens, and then in the future there will be this genuine cultural exchange. What we at Penn are trying to emphasize is that the literature is a part of that, that we inspire some really sort of genuine, radical, interesting Chinese literature We're just not sure that that can be done when the literature is approved by a committee.
Yeah, but Robert, if I was an official in Beijing, I might turn around to you and say, well, it wasn't all that long ago that Britain and the United States had censorship bodies that prevented books being made public and entering the public arena. And who are you to tell Beijing that 2012 is the year in which they've got to do exactly what we're doing?
Who am I? Well, one, I'm just one member of a worldwide, international, multicultural group of writers spanning all around the globe. So I wouldn't say it's cultural imperialism. And also, you know, I'd agree with them. I'd say that, you know, when the Americans censored and when the British censored, it was pretty unpleasant. And we at Penn, for the last 91 years, have fought that kind of cultural stagnation, even in our own country. The reason English Penn is, I think, credible on these issues is because we campaign really vigorously for freedom of speech all around the world, including in the UK. That's what we spend a lot of our time doing. So all we're doing is holding China to exactly the same standards that we hold ourselves. And we think that they would be better for it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much indeed, Robert Sharp, Head of Campaigns and Communications of English Penn.
43 minutes past 10 here in London. If you're waking up in Japan, it's 6:43 a.m. Stay with us. We'll be talking in Aspen just after this.